most deserted. How long did she have before Bray rang out for shade class? She could only work on the box between breakfast and dinner and outside class time. The prospect of another blind leap into the tree did not appeal, even if the distractions could be made to work again.
"You'll have to leave the tree for class. They'll spot you then, anyway."
Nona said nothing, only curled her lip. But the devil had it right. She hadn't imagined she would get so far, and her plans had extended no further than securing and replacing the box. Nona turned the box in her hands, seeking a lock that looked easier than the rest. Across the rooftops, Bray sounded, calling out from the academia tower. "Blood!" Nona started to climb down. If the guards left the cloister before she did, then the contest was over. More than over, her achievements so far might no longer count. She paused for a moment low among the branches, struggling with the box one last time. In the next moment, rather than be caught trying to creep out, she stuffed the box into her habit and dropped from the tree, landing in a crouch some yards from the trunk.
"Ancestor!"
A handful of novices were still making their way out, and the cordon of mystic class guards were beginning their retreat towards the exits.
"It's her!"
The first girl to speak wasn't even one of the guards. "You got me." Nona straightened and stepped towards the little novice. "Elsie, isn't it? Red class?"
"Challenge!"
Joelle shrieked it, shoving Mally and Misha aside as she stormed towards Nona. "Too late." Nona turned to face her. "I've finished."
"Challenge!"
Joelle looked ugly with her face twisted and red. She had both hands raised as if about to strike her enemy. "Finished?" Sister Apple stepped out from behind the tree. Quite how she could have been there unseen, Nona couldn't fathom. True, her range coat was bark-patterned, but you couldn't hold a feather over your head and expect people to believe you were a hen.
"She's lying!"
Joelle shrugged off Alani, who sought to calm her.
"She's a lying peasant bitch!"
Her arm, raised in accusation, swung to point at the puzzle box nestled in the fork of the tree. Nona peered up at it. From down below, it did look quite convincing.
"That's not the box,"
Sister Apple said. "But to be finished, you would have to have opened the real one, Nona, and that does sound unlikely." Mystic class crowded round now, Darla and Zol joining them. Nona drew the puzzle box from her habit, holding it carefully. It sat across her cupped palms.
"Still locked!"
Joelle spat. "It's a difficult box to open," Sister Apple smiled. "It was a marvellous effort to retrieve it." Nona flattened her palms out a fraction, and the puzzle box fell into four sections along the lines that her flaw blades had cut through it. The thing was a solid block of bone, with no space inside. "Is that open enough?" Chapter 17. The last days leading up to 7 Day proved rather tense ones. No one in Mystic class save Nona, Darla, and Zol got to eat. Mistress Shade totaled the failures of the Shade Trial guards at 7 days without meals. The Abbess decreed that 7 Day be an exception, presumably concerned that an unbroken fast of such duration might do physical harm to some of the leanest novices. The class did not take their punishment with good humor. Sister Wheel devoted a lesson to the sin of pride.
"We are none of us more than a twig in the great tree of the ancestor. The gifts the ancestor has given us are for the benefit of all, not the aggrandizement of the individual. Pride is a poison that corrupts."
She turned her watery eyes on Nona. Nona resisted asking if the chosen one was just another twig. Sister Rail directed academia lessons back towards algebra, as if knowing how much Nona hated it. Of those without rumbling stomachs, Zol was the only one able to cope with the scrawl of letters and symbols the nun covered her board in. Sister Apple devoted 2 lessons to a dissection of Nona's tactics in the trial, keeping the resentful focus of the class on the origin of their distress. If you can't disguise yourself as someone else, then disguising others as you is sometimes an option. Keep this fact in mind. If you're set to trailing a target, you might be tempted to fixate on one marker they can't discard. Perhaps their height. Perhaps they've lost an arm. These can be reliable when the target doesn't suspect they are being followed. But if they are suspicious, then these seemingly unique markers can be the very thing they use to make you fail. You might find yourself pursuing another very tall man, another one-armed woman, offered up to take advantage of your laziness. She concluded with the box. The box is there to teach a lesson. Its secret is revealed when sisters take the grey. We will need a new way to teach that lesson now. At least for enough years to outlast the convent's memory. It's there to teach sisters of discretion that whilst there is a time to be subtle, a time for stealth, deception, and the lightest touch, there is also always, when the seconds are running out and we come to the sharp end of things, the possible need for violent and direct action. Never be so focused on picking a lock that you forget kicking down the door is also an option. In bladesword training continued, but Sister Tallow took half a lesson to talk about the upcoming ice trial. Sister Egg will be staying with us for 4 weeks to instruct you in surviving the ice. You'll need more than range coats and convent shoes out there. You'll need to learn the 9 basic types of snow, how to spot and traverse a crevasse, how to build shelters, cook food. 4 weeks will just scratch the surface. More novices have died on the ice trial than any other, so pay attention. Even if you take the ordeal of the shield, you will have Sister Rose on hand to try to fix whatever holes might get put through you. On the ice, you will be alone, no matter how many novices are with you. Nona's days rolled by, lessons amid the sullen regard of her classmates, nights in a dormitory full of rumbling stomachs, breaks in the cloister where her victory was replayed by Ara and the others over and over. And through it all, Jewelly Namsis watched her, with just the hint of a mocking smile on her lips. She didn't have to say it. Hessa. Nona could triumph in as many convent games as she liked. The real world lay outside, and on the one occasion that world had reached into Sweet Mercy, Nona's friend had died. Yisht walked free out there. Sherzal had the ship heart. Nona's success meant nothing. When the summons came to present herself before Abbess Glass, Nona had no idea what to expect. She took herself to the door of the Abbess's house, and her knock was answered by Sister Pale, who led her to Glass's office. The Abbess sat behind her desk with a welcoming smile and eyes that took Nona's measure. In a convent full of women honed into athletes by blade training and deadly with their hands, it often surprised Nona that ultimate authority rested in the palm of a motherly woman, somewhat overweight, hair streaked with grey, who wouldn't last more than moments against the youngest Hunska half-blood. But then Nona would remember how that old lady's palm came to bear such a mass of burn scars, and her question would be answered.
"Nona, have a seat." Nona sat and waited. "Your performance in the Shade trial was a triumph."
Nona waited for the but.
"But I want you to think about what role awaits you in the wider world, however narrow it might be when you leave our convent. Out there you can't always win. No one person, no matter what amount of physical skill they might have, can change the tide of a war or deflect the uprising of a political movement. Not even the most famed of mystic sisters, with the power of the path running through their veins, were single-handedly responsible for defeating nations or able to steer the populace. From the outside, Sweet Mercy looks very small. Our job here is to teach you to deal with failure as much as it is to teach you to win. We have failed to teach you about failure. I tell you this as I fear time is running out, and simply hearing the lesson may have to stand in for being shown it. Nona opened her mouth to explain how she had learned that lesson when she failed Hesse, but her lips couldn't shape the words. You're powerful, Nona, and you've come into your power at an early age. The understanding that power corrupts is an idea older than the language we repeat it in. All of us in positions that afford authority over others are susceptible, be we high priests, prime instigators, even abbesses.
Or emperors, Nona said. The abbess winced.
Some truths are better left implied, dear. She glanced at the door, then continued. The church has power, and the Inquisition is intended to keep it from corruption. The red and the grey are a power, and among the high priest's tasks is to ensure those who direct them are not led astray from the righteous path. Each member of the red and the grey is a power in themselves, and it is my job to ensure they remember their strength is a gift intended for service. And of course there are the shipharts, each a source of vast potential. But do they corrupt the ones who direct that strength? Nona said nothing. She didn't know the answers, saving that she was already tainted and the stain upon her had his own name. I tell you this, Nona, because difficult times are ahead for us all, and I want you to have faith in what we've taught you here. What I've taught you. When strength is in your hands, there is a temptation to lash out against what looks like injustice. But our rules are all we have to stop everyone lashing out, each to their own sense of justice. Battles are better fought within the system, even when it seems broken. The abbess sighed. You're young, and I'm boring you. Run along. But don't forget what I've told you.
Nona ran as instructed, but it wasn't boredom that snapped at her heels, but a host of worries, unused to such young prey. Ready? The four of them stood around the wellhead in the laundry room. It was now the safest route into the caves. 7-day trips into Verity had been suspended to allow the Inquisition closer observation of the convent and its inhabitants. Brother Pelter's watchers numbered 8 now, swelled by new arrivals from the Tower of Inquiry.
Ready, Ara held a lantern.
Ready,
Jula peered down the well.
For Hesse,
Ruli nodded.
For justice. I'm going to get Sweet Mercy its shipheart back. I'm going to kill Yisht. And Shirzal is going to bleed for her crimes.
3 impossible things. But passing the Grey Trial had seemed impossible just days ago. The abbess had cautioned Nona about failure, but she had also told her to have faith. Nona clambered over the guard wall and began to climb down the rope. Even if escaping through the pillars unseen was no longer an option, the well got them where they wanted to go much more swiftly. They dropped any pretense that they were respecting the abbess's edict against the undercaves. Even Jula hadn't blinked. It was for Hesse. A short while later, all 4 of them were standing wet-legged at the pool's edge, in the oubliette beneath the novice cloister.
Saint's teeth!
Jula covered her face.
It stinks in here.
A gallon of kelp juice will do that.
Ruli went to get the empty tub that Nona had failed to return and placed it beside the pool.
Let's go!
Jula took the lantern and led the way. Although the distance from the novice cloister to the ancestor's dome couldn't be more than 100 yards, it took nearly an hour of twisting passages and tight crawls until Jula stopped them.
All I've got to go on is what you've told me. But if the shipheart was under the rear of the dome, we want to go up there. It shouldn't be far.
She pointed up at a fissure in the tunnel's ceiling.
3 yards above their heads and fringed with stalactites.
Tough throw,
Ara frowned. She pulled the grapple from her back and twirled it around her hand.
Better hope there's a good edge at the top.
She sped the twirling and with a grunt of effort released the iron hook vertically, trailing rope. A moment later the novices jumped back as it clattered down the fissure again. 30 throws later, each of them had taken a turn and not once had the grapple caught even enough of a ledge to support its own weight.
It's probably smooth, coated in flowstone.
Ruli took another throw and stepped away to let the hook fall.
We need to go back. We can try again another 7 day, Jula said. Oil's low.
Stealing oil was another thing that had become far more difficult since the Inquisition had tightened their noose. Not only were the watchers watching, but the convent's ledgers were all under scrutiny, as if a nun might be selling off supplies to fill the pockets of her habit with silver.
We can try a little longer.
Ara reached for the grapple. Nona shot her a thankful glance.
Not unless you want to try to find the way back in the dark.
Jula held the lantern up.
Next time we'll get here quicker. We know the way now.
Nona looked up, biting her lip, glancing first at one wall, then the other. They stood too far apart to touch both, let alone brace for a climb. The distance to the fissure was too high to jump, even if Darla were there, and Nona stood on her shoulders.
Let me try.
Nona backed against the left wall, then launched herself towards the right, leaping as high as she could. When her hands hit the rock, the floor blades sheathing her fingers sunk into the stone. The rest of her crashed into the wall, her feet dangling not much more than a yard above the rock-strewn floor.
Impressive,
Ara said in a distinctly unimpressed voice.
Are you stuck now?
I may have broken both knees, Nona hissed.
Certainly they both hurt. A lot.
Should I help you down?
Ruli asked, not quite able to suppress a smirk. Nona ignored her, instead hunching her body and walking her feet up the wall until all of her was bunched just beneath her hands. If her claws slipped free, she would fall 10 feet, and her head and shoulders would hit the ground first. Pushing with her legs, she angled up, then launched herself again, backwards this time, releasing her claws. She turned as she flew towards the opposite wall and managed to dig her claw blades in again. This time, before her body crashed into the wall, she braced with her feet. She'd gained nearly a yard in elevation. On the fifth leap, with every muscle burning, Nona caught the edge of the fissure in the tunnel roof and hung beneath it by her blades, swinging. Jula applauded.
Of course now you really are stuck,
Ara observed. Nona dangled.
She's right, you know.
Keote ran beneath her hair. Nona scowled. Air escaped her in short breaths. She had nothing to push against. She released one set of her blades and dangled by one arm. The three novices below hurried into place to try to break her fall. Snarling, Nona swung, lunged upwards and managed to dig her blades in 6 inches higher. A few panted breaths, then she repeated the process with the other hand. Slowly, by degrees, she climbed into the fissure. 3 times she hung, sobbing with the pain, her arms growing weaker with each moment, ready to drop. But against the darkness, she saw Yisht from Hesse's eyes. Yisht, as she loomed over Hesse's broken body, knife in hand. I am not given to cruelty, child, the woman had said. But you reached into my mind, and a violation like that cannot go unanswered. The strength came from somewhere, and Nona climbed. Once Nona had her feet inside the fissure and could brace herself against both walls, climbing came easy. Or would have, but for the weakness of her trembling arms. A few minutes later, she hauled herself onto flatter ground and lay there, gasping.
How are you going to see anything?
Ara called up.
We haven't got time for us all to climb up, even if we can get a rope to you.
Jula's voice.
I don't need the lantern,
Nona called down.
Just give me a minute or two to feel around. Feel around?
Ruli, incredulous.
It's too dangerous,
Jula called.
You'll break an ankle or probably vanish down a hole. 1 minute,
Nona called. Now do it.
What?
Make me see like you did when you were scared.
I am Kiot. Fear has no meaning to me.
Whatever you say, make me see. Nona pushed Kiot towards her eyes. For a moment he resisted. Then, perhaps curious, he flowed into them. The pain made her gasp and brought tears running down her face. She hadn't noticed the pain the first time. The Holothur's fear had left no room for such things. Immediately the rocks took on the glow of coals deep in the fire. Nona looked at her hands and found them utterly black, her habit almost as dark with hints of deep grey here and there. The water-carved passage she had climbed into led in two directions. She chose the best one and scrambled off along it. Within 20 yards she stood where Hesse had fallen, at the foot of the shaft Yisht had dug up towards the Shipheart's vault.
Your friend died here?
Yes.
And you still want to kill the one who slew her, as you agreed to?
Yes.
Good.
Kiot relaxed, and the glow of the walls brightened.
Hate is good.
She died here. Nona crouched amid the scatter of broken rock. Yisht, a marshal with a rare talent for rockwork, had brought down part of the ceiling.
Nona! Nona!
Distant cries from below. She touched her fingers to the floor beneath the shattered stone. Had Hesse's blood spilt here? Had the nuns washed it away when they took her body? They had buried her down by the vineyards, but left no marker. We are all one in the ancestor. Our bones are nothing.
Nona!
Nona reached for her clarity. Watching the dance of an absent flame in the shadows of her mind, she looked for the path and rocked back upon her heels. With Kiot's vision, the path blazed red, written through everything, filling the air, diving into the rock and filling the hidden space beyond, writing itself across the surfaces and bringing each to life. Refusing to be distracted by the wonder of it, Nona strove to look past the path's beauty, to the periphery where threads stray. There in the depths of the earth, she found a threadscape that competed with Zol's for sparseness. Sister Pan said humans themselves drew threads from the path. All life did. In the darkest and loneliest cave within the rock, in places no person had ever seen or would ever see, where no rat had scurried, no worm crawled, the path would lie pure, bound tight. If that cave were broached, then the mere act of gazing upon its secrets would set tendrils of thread straying from the path, just as a foot set into a clear pool will raise silt from the bottom to cloud the waters. Nothing. The word tasted bitter. A faint hope can be nursed so long that when it dies, the shock outweighs all reason. Hesse would have found something in my place. She would have read something in the threads. Kiot remained silent.
Nona!
The others sounded increasingly desperate.
Coming!
She almost missed it. Something at the corner of her eye as she turned. Perhaps without Kiot she would have seen nothing.
What?
She turned back, reaching. A single black thread, so thin she almost thought herself mistaken, even as her fingers tried to close around it. A black thread, leading from the spot where Hesse died, up along the shaft Yisht cut. There are no black threads. Nona reached to trap the thread between finger and thumb. Sister Pan said that using your hands was unnecessary, a childish affectation, like moving your lips when you read. Even so, it helped. Nona pinched the thread from the ground.
Ancestor!
Immediately a familiar energy trickled into her, fingers first, then into her hand, making it tingle. A fullness. A potential. It felt like... the ship heart?
That is not a thread from a core stone.
Kiot sounded interested, though, moving entirely into her eyes, the pain so bad she had to grit her teeth against it.
What is it, then?
Nona pulled on the thread and immediately felt a peculiar sense of disquiet. Nana even would have said,
"Someone just walked over your grave."
Nona leaned around the corner of the shaft, trying to see where the thread led, and picked it out easily now that she held it. It vanished into the rock.
"That's where Yisht went."
The murderer had sealed the passage behind her as she went, her rock-working power amplified by the ship heart. Nona had hoped that her disembodied shadow had killed the woman, a hope that had survived only until she returned to the convent from the ranging with the other novices.
"Are you so stupid? It's your own shadow. That is why you found it where others could not."
"It's my shadow's thread?"
Nona stared at it.
"Why does it feel like the ship heart, then?"
For that, Kiot had no answer.
"Nona!"
Anger mixed with anxiety in the distant voices now.
"I can't just leave,"
she whispered.
"With the Inquisition here, we might not get another chance for ages."
"Take it with you."
"What?"
"It's your thread. Take it with you."
So Nona did. Chapter 18. Abbess Glass. Hart Hall had always been a lie. More so now, the convent no longer housed the ship heart that had been entrusted to its keeping. Abbess Glass placed her hand against the door and frowned. Entrusted to her keeping. Abbess Mace, they called, she of the miracle. Glass knew what they would call her if her portrait ever joined the others. She of the lost heart. The abbess pushed through into the long hall where her sisters sat around the convent table. Tonight, they waited beneath the watchful eyes of Brother Pelter and two of his assistants. Three inquisitors to witness eight nuns at table.
"Abbess Glass?"
Pelter inclined his head. Glass took her chair. The seat beside it lay empty. Kettle's place. Sister Rail would have to take the notes this time. She exhaled, and the air clouded. Every breath contrived to remind her of the ship's heart's absence, of her failure.
"First item on the agenda."
Glass looked along the table. Rose, wheel, tallow, rail, apple, rock, and Sister Pan huddled in her furs, dark eyes aglitter.
"I have delivered the grey reports for the last 5 years into Brother Pelter's keeping, as requested."
Sister Apple looked as if she would rather have poisoned the man.
"Thank you,"
Glass smiled.
"And the ciphers?"
"And the ciphers?" The reports were fakes. Apple had for years been producing a copy of each report, altering, excising, and sanitizing. The encryption she used differed from that employed on the true reports, and the ciphers had been designed to be devilishly time-consuming to apply. Glass wished Pelter and his subordinates much joy of it.
"Next!"
Abbess Glass glanced towards Sister Wheel. She always had something to raise.
"Heresy!"
Brother Pelter stepped up behind the abbess's chair.
"Heresy, brother!"
"This whole convent is treading dangerously close to heresy, Abbess. Your buildings may stand upon the edge of a cliff, but your faith teeters at the brink of a far deeper chasm."
"Indeed." Glass steeled herself neither to rise nor look around.
"These are grave charges, Inquisitor. Perhaps
You could elaborate.
Pelter began to circle the table, staring at the back of each nun's head.
It is more a matter of attitude and atmosphere at the moment. Something rotten in the state of Mercy.
Hearsay and heresy, though they may sound similar, are very different things, Brother Pelter. Glass set her elbows to the table and steepled her fingers before her.
A crime is built of specifics. Have you any of those?
Pelter paused, his stride.
The worst example so far has been in spirit class.
Spirit class? You amaze me.
Glass didn't have to pretend surprise. The idea that Sister Wheel might fall short in any measure of piety or protocol stretched her belief.
There have been some questionable choices in the selection of saints to be studied.
Brother Pelter looked grave.
The novices make their own choice of saint for the spiritesse.
Sister Wheel looked outraged.
There are no works by or concerning heretics in my library. The ancestors' library, that is.
She thumped the table.
I defy you to find even one.
One of your novices is even now writing about David,
Pelter said.
David!
Sister Wheel opened her mouth, but no further words emerged.
Perhaps you could enlighten us, sister,
Abbess Glass asked.
I'm not familiar with this man.
I?
Wheel's frown became a scowl.
I'm not.
Few people have heard of him, Pelter said. Raised to the sainthood in the Onian period.
I've nothing from the Dark Ages in the library.
Wheel shook her head.
And yet there are books in Sweet Mercy that do not reside in your library,
Pelter said. A knock at the door forestalled any reply Sister Wheel might have to say. Sister Pale's head appeared. There's a novice who says she has important information for the table, and that it can't wait. Unexpectedly, Sister Pan turned in her chair.
Tell her that it can wait, and will wait.
Abbess Glass nodded. It paid to listen when the old woman spoke.
Tell?
She has Watcher Eris with her, Abbess, Pale interrupted. He wants Brother Pelter to hear her. Abbess Glass sighed.
Send her in.
Pelter would demand it. Better to give it to him and not lose face. Sister Pale opened the door, and Watcher Eris, a short man whose pot belly strained his tunic, strode in. Joelle Namsis followed, looking demure, her gaze on the floor.
Joelle, you had something urgent to tell us?
Glass fixed the girl with a hard stare. Joelle nodded, biting her lip as if unsure.
Well, do tell us, novice.
Glass motioned with her hand. Joelle hesitated, a show of reluctance.
A trip thread in the undercaves has been triggered.
Intruders?
Glass closed the hand upon the table into a fist. But it wasn't outsiders. Sister Pan had wanted this kept quiet.
I hope it's intruders, Joelle, and that you have not interrupted the important business of the convent table to tell tales on fellow novices.
She knew Brother Pelter would make his move sooner or later, but this was too soon for anything usable to be placed into his hands. The abbess put every ounce of her will into the stare with which she pinned the girl before her. More woman than girl, truth be told, and far too beautiful for her own good. Shut your mouth, novice. Shut your mouth and go away. On almost any novice, Glass's stare might have had its desired effect, but Joelle, full of earned grievance, natural spite, and the confidence that a rich family engenders, shrugged it off.
It's only, Abbess, that I remembered how strongly you emphasized that the undercaves were off-limits after you know, the Shipheart was taken. You said...
I remember what I said.
Joelle proved relentless.
You said that anyone wandering there without permission would be banished from the convent.
This sounds to be a serious act of defiance.
Brother Pelter crossed the room to stand before Joelle.
How do you come to know of such a crime, child?
Abbess Glass paid no regard to their play-acting. Pelter had started his career as house priest to the Namsis family. He would have known Joelle as a young girl and still have close contacts with her father. Joelle turned her wide green eyes towards the Inquisitor.
I helped Sister Pan place the trip threads, and several of them are attuned to me.
She paused as if waiting for a question.
So I know if anyone other than a sister crosses them, and who that person is.
Who was it?
A novice, brother. One of our order. Nona Grey.
And Sister Pan?
Brother Pelter approached the nun.
Did you not know of this too? I did.
Sister Pan replied testily.
But you didn't think fit to mention it at table.
Abbess Glass beat Sister Pan to a reply, well aware that her mistress' path had been quite capable of levelling buildings in her prime, and might still be able to turn an impertinent monk inside out.
We were only on the first item of business, Brother Pelter. You yourself interrupted the order to talk of heresy before we reached the second.
There are no bad times to speak against heresy, Abbess.
Pelter folded his arms.
And the novice that was wallowing in it with her ill-advised writings on the Dark Age saint, known as Devid, was none other than this Nona Grey we have just heard about.
He resumed stalking around the table. Glass felt the jaws of the trap close around her.
And the punishment you prescribed for transgression was to be banished from the convent?
Nona is a three-blood. We can't send her out into the world. That's madness.
Glass drew a deep breath and released it slowly.
When I made that ruling, it was a week after the theft. A novice had died down there. I said what was needed to keep others from getting themselves hurt.
I agree with you.
Brother Pelter nodded. He rounded the head of table, footsteps echoing in the cold air.
I'm glad. Flexibility is what's needed.
Glass forced herself to unclench her fist.
I agree that we can't allow the child out into the world. She's too valuable. Others will seize her and turn her talents against the church and against the Emperor. Flexibility, though? Flexibility is a toxin, the ally of heresy. It's flexibility that allowed this child to get hold of unsuitable histories in the first place. Rules must be iron. Decisions must be kept too. Decrees obeyed.
I suppose we could strip her of the habit and keep her at the convent as a lay worker. Perhaps a laborer in the vineyard,
Glass offered.
All along the table her sisters watched with mixed expressions. Outrage from Tallow, horror from Rose, satisfaction twisting Rail's smile, confusion making something almost comical of Wheel's face.
Or in the pigsties.
No.
The Inquisitor held his hand up.
Banished. That was the word. You cannot be banished and yet remain. And you cannot banish someone who can become so deadly a weapon in an enemy's hand. An impasse,
croaked Sister Pan from her furs.
No impasse, sister,
Brother Pelter smiled.
We drown the child, then throw her body off the cliff.
Chapter 19.
Get your coat on!
Nona looked up from the desk beside her bed. All around the dormitory, novices stopped their preparations for sleeping or laid down their quills. Sister Kettle stood in the doorway, pale-faced, darkness smoking off her skin,
Me? Nona stood up, touching a hand to her chest.
You!
Kettle stepped into the room, glancing left and right.
You have to come with me.
The points of a throwing star glimmered from the closed fist at her side.
Now!
Nona glanced down at her feet. The slippers she had on were a gift from Ara, lined with blue squirrel fur. She stepped out of them and reached for her shoes.
What's the matter?
Darla rose from her bed, towering over the approaching nun. She rolled her neck, clicking bones.
Gather what you need for a journey.
Kettle knelt and started to rummage in Nona's cupboard.
We're leaving in 2 minutes.
Zol raised her head from between her bed and Mally's, abandoning her press-ups.
There is a problem.
Not a question.
I will help.
You have your own problem,
Kettle said, still stuffing Nona's possessions into a hemp sack.
Tarkax is here to escort you to Shazal's palace.
No! Nona had one arm into her range coat and was struggling with the other.
Zol's one of us now!
Kettle stood, tying the sack closed.
Not if her mother disagrees. Church over parent is Scythrol heresy. The abbess can't afford to argue the case.
Can't afford?
Nona realized she was shouting.
Can't afford?
I have no mother, Zol said, and I wish to remain here.
She stood by her bed now, a solid 6 foot of killing machine, hard-eyed and ready.
You stay there, then.
Kettle reached for Nona's hand and began to pull her towards the door.
Wait!
Darla stepped forward.
Where are you going?
Away! Kettle swept the room with dark eyes and shadows swirled.
I wasn't here.
She set a finger to her lips. Her gaze settled on Croce and Ilani beside Joelle's empty bed.
There are worse things, novices, than the Inquisition. Consider that.
A tug of her hand, and she had Nona stumbling towards the door. Together they hurried down the stairs. Nona dug her heels in as they drew level with the door to Grey Class.
What's going on? I don't want to leave.
We can talk about it outside.
Kettle started towards the main door.
Can't I say goodbye?
Nona jerked her arm free. She couldn't just go.
What about Ara and the others?
Ara and the others aren't in trouble.
Kettle cocked her head as if hearing something.
Quick! Come here!
She backed into the corner behind the main door, gathering shadows to her.
Trouble?
Nona went to join Kettle and the nun drew her close, both arms tied around her as the darkness clotted.
You were in the undercaves,
Kettle whispered.
Joelle had trip threads there.
But...
A cold realization reached into Nona.
The ship heart wasn't thread-guarded.
It washes those magics away.
The ship heart isn't there anymore.
Kettle put her hand to Nona's mouth as the door opened. 4 watchers marched in, boots loud on the stone floor, a freezing wind whipping around them. They carried on up the stairs, not bothering to close the door.
Stay close.
Kettle tossed something out through the doorway. Nona heard it clatter on the flagstones off to the left.
Now!
Kettle moved with Hanska swiftness, wearing darkness like a robe. They slipped from the doorway, veering to the right, then pressed themselves to the wall. With the sun having set and night having fallen most of the way, the two of them presented little target.
Over by the scriptorium,
Kettle murmured. Nona saw a 5th watcher there, tight against the corner of the building. Her head turned towards the spot where Kettle's noisemaker had landed.
That one at least you should kill.
Keogh rose with the pounding of her heart. Move slowly, keep close, Kettle instructed. If I tell you to run, then run. Get off the rock and don't come back.
Don't come back?
Nona felt lost.
I need to say goodbye. To Ara.
Kettle pursed her lips in sympathy, but shook her head. They mean to kill you, Nona.
Let them try.
Keot attempted to force her blades into being.
Can't the Abbess?
The Abbess isn't in charge here anymore, Nona. You have to go. Hide. Make a life somewhere else. Change your name. Kettle started to edge along the wall.
Change my eyes?
Nona kept her place.
If you stay here, you will die.
Kettle moved off, the shadows flowing with her. Nona followed. They reached the pillar forest before Bitel began to ring atop the ancestor's dome, its voice harsh with accusation. Kettle led through the towering stonework, Nona close behind, eyes slitted against the wind-borne grit. The corridor wind was re-establishing itself after the longest ice wind Nona had ever known. Neither spoke as they descended the long back and forth of the Seren Way, treacherous by day, foolish by dark. Nona slipped at the last turn, scattering loose rock over the fall. Kettle caught her hand.
Got you!
Nona regained her feet and shook free.
And now you're kicking me out?
The trail before them led down to level ground where field and forest stretched away from the Rock of Faith. The rising moon tinged it all with blood.
They're after me too, Nona. Everything is falling apart. The Abbess can't help us. We can fight them,
Nona rounded on Kettle.
They're just 9 against us. I've killed more men than that by myself.
And I wish you hadn't had to. Kettle looked down.
We can't fight them. They're the church. We're the church,
Nona shouted.
The Inquisition is nothing.
Kettle shook her head.
It's all one, all joined. What do you think Abbess Glass did before she came to Sweet Mercy? She ran the Inquisition. High Inquisitor Shella Yamel. That was before her son died. No, I don't believe that.
Nona backed away.
We can't fight the church,
Kettle followed her.
What else would we have left?
Each other?
Nona said, eyes hot and prickling.
Nona, you will always be my sister.
Kettle reached out and caught Nona's shoulder.
The convent could fall from the rock. Every holy book could burn. That wouldn't change.
She put her other hand to the side of Nona's face, angling her eyes towards her. They were almost of a height now.
I'm going to try to make a shadow bond between us.
It won't work.
Nona had seen Kettle call to Apple through her bond. The Nói Gúan used them too.
I lost my shadow. I'm going to try, and if you need me, you could call.
Let's try.
Nona attempted a smile. She couldn't twist her face right, though. Kettle took Nona's hand and interlaced their fingers into a tight grip, dark eyes determined. She frowned with concentration. The night thickened around them, blackening away the sky, swallowing the stars, leaving only the red eye of the moon. Kettle squeezed, hard enough to make the bones creak in Nona's hand. The darkness became a physical thing, masking even the moon. Nona felt it washing over her, but sensed no deeper connection.
It's not working,
Kettle moaned.
Try!
Nona stared at the place she knew their hands were joined. She stared until her eyes burned, and the path sliced through the blackness, everywhere at once, infinite, complex, filling the space, defining the surfaces, shaping Kettle from nothing with a multitude of glowing veins, a light that no darkness could touch. Nona stared harder still, seeing past the path's brightness to the shining shroud of threads whispering through everything, strands freed from the unity of the path.
It's not working!
Kettle tried to release Nona's hand, but Nona gripped back with all her strength. A warmth rose around her. The focus approaching. They must have been locked in this embrace for hours. Anyone could find them. Inquisitors must be on their trail by now. Nona pushed away the sudden panic.
The focus moon swept away Kettle's shadows, and the Grey Sister cried out as if scalded. Nona wouldn't let her pull free. She remembered another focus, the heat bathing her and Hesse on the scriptorium steps on the night Hesse had threadbound them both.
It will work.
Nona seized the threads around her wrist and Kettle's without delicacy. Taking all of them together, bundled in her left hand, she made a fist and squeezed as hard as she could. And in that moment, the focus moon blazed so bright it took the world away.
What have you done?
Nona opened her eyes to see Kettle kneeling over her, her face hidden in darkness.
I don't know.
Nona struggled to sit.
I thread-bound us.
Only two quantals can thread-bind. You have to share the blood. Kettle helped Nona to stand. Nona put a hand to the cliff where the rock rose from the plains. She felt too tall, as if her feet were 20 yards below her.
We do share a blood. We're both Hanska.
Somewhere above them a scattering of rocks rattled down the slope.
They're coming! Go!
Kettle shoved Nona towards the Verity Road.
Come with me!
Nona heard the pleading in her voice and hated herself for it.
I can't. Appy and the Abbess need me. The convent needs me.
Kettle bit her knuckle, hard.
I just can't.
Nona started to run into the night.
I'll delay them,
Kettle called in a low voice.
Stay safe, little sister. Be careful.
Moments later, Nona was jogging along a rough track towards the Verity Road. Everything she owned in a sack bouncing on her back. Everyone she knew, everything she cared about, retreating behind her. An hour later, running through rough fields of rain-lashed mud, she came to the margins of a wood and halted among the trees. The cold wrapped her. Her stomach growled. Her feet ached. An emptiness gnawed inside her. A sense of loss. Of failure. She set her back to the trunk of a pine and the tears came, racking sobs that hurt her chest. She cried for an hour.
You should have killed her when I said.
Nona didn't have to ask who. Joelle had played her from the start. The girl had pulled her strings, her threads too, perhaps. But Nona wasn't sure of that. Joelle had goaded her into those caves, taunting her about Hesse, knowing the punishment, and knowing all the time that the moment Nona set foot in the place where her friend had died, her intrusion would be known. Nona had been a fool.
You should have murdered her that first day.
Yes. Nona wiped her eyes and set her mouth in a grim line.
I probably should have.
Chapter 20.
Where will you go?
I don't know.
Nona had no idea. Crouching in the margins of a damp forest wasn't a good long-term plan. It wasn't even a good short-term plan.
You'll need to steal food.
Probably.
You'll have to kill them.
Who?
The people you steal the food from. You don't want any witnesses to lead your enemies after you.
Kiot sounded quite cheerful about the whole thing. Just a line of corpses to lead them instead?
You should go to the city.
Kiot had enjoyed their trip to Verity. That's where the Tower of Inquiry is. I'm not difficult to spot. Sister Rose had tried to reverse the effect the Black Cure had on Nona's eyes several times, but none of her potions had any noticeable effect. Nona had been disappointed at the time, but now those failures were taking on more importance. There's nowhere I won't be discovered. In the east, dawn made a sullen approach, shading the black sky towards grey,
Nona's legs hurt. She was tired, cold despite her windbreak and range coat, and her stomach had started to grumble even though she wouldn't have had breakfast yet. I'm going to have to leave the Empire. I could take a ship to Dern. She wriggled her fingers in the pockets of her coat, remembering that such things cost, and that she had no money. Or cross over the border into Scythrol.
Or go back to kill Joelle, and then her friends, and the Inquisitor, and his underlings.
Nona felt cold and tired rather than murderous. Joelle had been the architect of her downfall, but it was Nona's own stupidity she had used to do it. Still, given the chance, Nona felt she would enjoy breaking Joelle's other knee. With the world revealing itself around her, Nona set off eastwards, cutting across country in case the Inquisition had guards on the roads. She dug a heel of bread from her coat pocket. She always kept some supplies against the possibility of nighttime hunger pangs, and chewed as she walked. The world might have narrowed, but it was still a big place, and somewhere in it there would be a spot for her. She looked back just once, towards the rock where Ara and her other friends lay sleeping. I will come back. For the first day, Nona kept off any track larger than a deer trail. She walked due east beneath a grey sky with the corridor wind at her shoulders. At one farm, she stole eggs from the nest box, quieting a mean-eyed hound with the whispering trick that Ruli had taught her. Some work of Marjal empathy, no doubt, though Ruli never mentioned the blood, just saying that the power was in whispering the right kind of nonsense. Later she took a whole hen from the yard of another farm, wringing its neck and running when a field hand came shouting from an outhouse. She sat in her bivouac that night, beneath a roof of branches and heaped bracken, staring at the bird.
You don't want it now.
I don't want it raw.
You ate those eggs raw.
I didn't want to, and this is different.
So cook it.
Keot seemed disinterested, but her hunger did appear to annoy him, as if he felt an echo of it. Nona looked away from the heap of feathers, scanning the trees and the shadows gathering amid the undergrowth. All day she'd had the feeling she was being followed, but she was unused to such open spaces after years spent within the convent, and it was likely just nerves that set the skin between her shoulder blades crawling, even when Keot was not sitting there. Nona dropped her gaze to her open hand. The dark thread that now bound her, however tenuously, to her shadow, lay in the groove that her lifeline made across her palm. The old woman in the village had read palms, all of them except Nana Even, who said it was superstitious nonsense, had read the entrails of rabbits instead. Nona knew that such threads could be followed. Shazal's men had somehow followed the threads to discover Nona as a child, their thread worker leading troops almost to her doorstep. But how someone pursued a thread, Nona had no idea. Her shadow's thread didn't run through the forest like a trail of string unwound behind a cautious explorer. Instead, like every other thread, it led off at curious angles to the world, requiring steps that no feat of blood and bone could take if it was to be followed. If she were still at Sweet Mercy, Nona would have asked Sister Pan and been taught the techniques required. But the convent lay miles behind, and forbidden. The thread in her hand was less the solution to a problem, and more a reminder of what she had lost. Still, she would try to be open to whatever pull the thread might exert, to let it guide her. Perhaps it would steer her choices and take her by strange paths to where she wished to go. Sister Tallow had taught the novices how to make fire with stick, twine, and kindling. And Nona, with her Hunska speed, had always been good at it in the convent. Out in the dampness of the forest, though, with the wind complaining through the trees, it proved impossible to reproduce her success. Finally, with one of Clara's favourite curses,
She threw down the stick, one end steaming gently, and let the wind steal what leaves and moss she had gathered.
Find a peasant and take